The cops are well groomed with muscle physiques in Butt Town. Their tan uniforms are tailored and chic in Butt Town. Any young black male who walks down the street is gonna get stopped by a car full of meat. But the girl with the
Welcome everybody to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks, NFL reporter for BleacherReport.com, SportsNot.com, Scout.com, an occasional writer of fantasy football columns for Pro Football Focus. I'm joined, like I am every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Yo.
So, the NFL draft has come and gone. The first round wrapping
finally
7 days ago tonight, as we were recording here on Thursday night. And, of course, round seven ending early in the evening on Saturday. So much has happened since the draft, though, around the National Football League. It kind of feels like it's been a whole month since these players have been drafted. But in fact, it's been but a week.
Just a week. A long week.
It was an entertaining draft. I think a lot of unexpected things happened in this draft. There were a lot of rumors heading into it, especially heading into round one, that there were going to be a lot of trades, a lot of teams interested in moving up to number two, where the Tennessee Titans picked, in order to take Marcus Mariota. It turned out that moving up into the top five, top seven or so, was just far too expensive. The demands just far too high by those teams, and nobody ended up moving up that high. In fact, we saw a record low amount of trades in this draft as compared to the last couple of years. Just two trades in the first round as compared to multiple trades that we have been seeing the past couple of years. The first trade not even coming until the middle of the round. So I think that ended up being kind of surprising. The Titans, of course, taking Marcus Mariota at number two. Tampa Bay, unsurprisingly, selecting Jameis Winston, quarterback out of FSU, at first overall. Another interesting development is that two running backs went in the top half of that first round. First, Todd Gurley from Georgia, heading to the St. Louis Rams at number 10 overall. Kind of not certain exactly when we're going to see Gurley on the field, as he's still rehabbing from that knee injury. But clearly, the St. Louis Rams see something
in him. I think
they're
calling for about a month.
Yeah, they're calling for about a month. So, he's not going to be starting right away, but he's going to be out there this year. And then we had the San Diego Chargers trade up from number 17 to number 15, where the San Francisco 49ers originally were slated to pick. And they took Wisconsin's Melvin Gordon, another running back there. He's going to be out there. They're going to be getting Danny Woodhead back from his injury. Gordon poised to be the bell cow out there.
That's a good pick for them.
It was a good pick for the Chargers. I mean, they have some issues that they need to take care of, both on offensive and defensive lines. They clearly coveted something about Melvin Gordon's game. So I thought that was pretty interesting, especially there was also just a large number of work in the trenches done in the first round. Lots of offensive linemen, lots of defensive linemen, ranging from
it's like an old school draft.
It was an old school draft. You had Washington take Brandon Scherff at fifth overall to potentially play right tackle or even guard this year. You had the Jets take the best defensive lineman in the draft, Leonard Williams, there at number six. You had another offensive lineman taken at number nine, Eric Flowers, to the New York Giants, and so on. So, a lot of offensive linemen, a lot of defensive linemen, especially in that top half of the draft. And of course, as expected, a lot of cornerbacks, a lot of the top corners taken in round one as well. So, it was kind of, to me, a conservative draft, a kind of a safe draft for a lot of teams, especially with these early picks. Safe can work. There are some teams that look that they did a better job than others in the draft. Of course, something that we won't really know until at least after this season wraps, if not a couple of years down the line, to see exactly
how well.
We'll
have a better idea after this year, but probably not for a couple of years.
So it's going to really take some time to actually see if the Atlanta Falcons actually did end up having the best draft or one of the best drafts, or if this all looks mighty fine on paper but isn't quite so much. once these guys hit the field. But it was, you know, it was the NFL draft. Got the hype season headed up before it. The excitement of Randy Gregory's pot citation.
Shane Ray.
Shane Ray's pot citation and Randy Gregory's reports of Randy Gregory's erratic behavior, including missing some team meetings with prospective.
Yeah, it was mysterious at first. There
NFL
was just all
teams.
This like, oh, you know, somebody doesn't like something about Randy Gregory, you know, and there was like that rumor was swirling around.
Sure.
And then it finally came out like maybe a couple hours before the draft that it was this missing team meetings or whatever. So
yes, and that saw him fall to the second round to the Dallas Cowboys. You know, the Dallas Cowboys actually came away with a pretty impressive group of drafted players and undrafted players. Today, they reached an agreement with offensive lineman Lael Collins. Lael Collins was slated to be questioned about any knowledge he has about what may have transpired involving his former girlfriend who was murdered along with her unborn fetus. A little while back, he's since been met with the authorities, been cleared, took a polygraph, was completely cleared. It's been clearly established he was not in Baton Rouge at the time of the crime, and therefore he was able to sign with any team, and he chose the Dallas Cowboys. So now you have the Dallas Cowboys taking cornerback Byron Jones in round one, landing Randy Gregory later in round two, and then getting Collins as an undrafted free agent. So basically you're getting three first-round quality, you know, first-round draft-graded players, you know, and
only
using
one
pick on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to say that was a pretty impressive set of at least, you know, just these three players for the Cowboys. But that's not the only news of the week. There's also the release of the Ted Wells report, which, of course, is the investigation into allegations that the New England Patriots improperly handled some footballs, deflated some footballs during the course of the 2014 season and the playoffs. It was found that it was more probable than not that the footballs were tampered with by a pair of Patriots equipment personnel at the behest, again, more probable than not, at the behest of quarterback Tom Brady. The report is 243 pages long. I've read quite a few chunks of it. The text messages in particular are kind of entertaining because these are full-grown men sending texts to each other that sound like it could be sent by 17 or 18-year-olds to each other. And, of course, there is all the damning evidence mounting against Patriots quarterback Tom Brady regarding his involvement with getting these balls illegally deflated. He did not turn over his phone or text message records or anything like that to Wells or the investigators. He has not cooperated with the investigation. He did claim, however, that he had no knowledge of what was being alleged or of these two equipment guys when, in fact, Tom Brady had repeated telephone conversations with these two equipment guys, especially around the time when the scandal first came to light during the playoffs, particularly that Indianapolis Colts game where the Patriots did indeed trounce the Colts and probably would have still done that even if the footballs were at the proper PSI. You know, here the problem here, of course, is Tom Brady's lying. I don't think this is – I'm not going to buy into the hyperbole that a lot of people have been saying that this completely tarnishes his legacy or anything like that. I'm sure he's not the only quarterback in the NFL who has, you know, done, you know, more than the rules allow when it comes to messing around with a football to get it to how quarterbacks each particularly like their footballs to be. So I wouldn't think that he's the only quarterback that has a scheme like this in place. And, you know, I would say whatever competitive advantage that it provides is marginal at best. I think just the main issue is Tom Brady's noncompliance with the investigation, something that could result in him, you know, being fined and potentially even suspended for, you know, an unknown amount of time. You know, the Patriots hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers in the season opener of the 2015 season, that Thursday, Thursday, September 10th, I believe. So that game could be played with Jimmy Garoppolo as the Patriots quarterback, while the Steelers will be without Le'Veon Bell, their star running back, and will be relying mainly on D'Angelo Williams to carry the rock in that game. So there, you know, there's some implications of this. I'm not entirely as outraged, I guess, as a lot of other people are. Maybe I should be more outraged, but you know, at this point, and there's a 243-page report. You can go and read it. It's available at NFLcommunications.com, if you so choose. But you know, I do think, you know, this is an unprecedented situation. So I am curious to see what kind of punishment actually gets meted out by Roger Goodell and his folks at the NFL.
I suppose that's marginally interesting. I'll say two things. One, I'm making a very concerted effort to not say any dumb jokes here.
Sure.
You know. And two is that there are a number of things for people to be outraged in the NFL.
No, there's so many things to be outraged about in the NFL. For example, who's that Michigan player that the
Frank Clark,
and they basically said that they conducted a thorough investigation into his domestic violence allegations, but they didn't talk to any of the witnesses and didn't look at any of the photographs of the victim's injuries or anything like that, so they could, you know, convince themselves into denial that they just drafted a
perfect example,
a domestic abuser.
That's a perfect example of something that people should be
in
a huff about.
That's
this
something
week.
That's worthy of outrage.
And I've heard some people talk about it. That addressed it as it should, but like, that's not what gets the attention. What gets the attention is this report that's released, and is Tom Brady lying? And man, they're a bunch of cheaters, and all this stuff. And it's stupid. I mean, it's like you said, when you look at any sort of, you know, quote unquote cheating, you know, what sort of competitive advantage is this giving you? And I don't even know how much of it does. I think it's more of a preference thing. Obviously, there's, you know, regulations in place from the league that say it's got to be whatever. And if it was outside of that, then it wasn't, you know, within those regulations. But everybody needs to understand that there's very different gradations of cheating, obviously.
Yes, of course.
And this has to fall on of the most minor scale, you know, the minor end of the scale. And it's just the people that are outraged about the incident are absurd to me. And those are mostly Brady and Patriot hater fans, I think, that I've seen. And then
a certain type of writer that likes to clutch some pearls, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think those guys are the ones really going after this. Well, Tommy lied, blah, 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 blah.
Legacy is tarnished.
Yeah, all the tarnished. It's just, come
not tarnished.
On.
Get over it.
You know,
I get that it's cheating because it's a violation of league rules, and that it's illegal, and it was wrong, and they did something that they shouldn't do, and it is in violation, and there should be punishment. Sure. But it's not... It's not even the same thing as the spying thing that the Patriots were in trouble for years
ago.
Right,
yeah, that was way worse. And
this is not the,
warranted
a Saints bounty system headed by Greg Williams.
Right.
This is on a scale of cheating
PSI.
And illegal stuff in the NFL. This is so minor,
this
comparatively.
It's PSI, not CSI. Sorry, that was bad.
Well, on that note, I don't want to talk about this scandal any longer.
Good.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we have a wonderful guest joining us this week. If anybody here is familiar with this here podcast, you probably listened to us chat with Rumford Johnny, he of the Rummy and Rummy Ray podcast, and formerly of Two Mugs Fantasy Football. He's going to be joining us to talk about the fantasy football impact of some of the top rookies in the 2015 draft class. Not only from a dynasty football, fantasy football standpoint, but also in a redraft standpoint as well. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about some fantasy football and some rookies with Rumford Johnny. So stay tuned here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. When you live in Butt Town, love is a letdown. If you live in Butt Town,
but in Butt Town, I'm learning. In Butt
NFL draft is done and over, which means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football and whether or not you participate in dynasty football and have a rookie draft coming up soon, or just want to get a little ahead of your competition in your redraft leagues and kind of get the heads up fantasy-wise about this rookie class. We've got our resident fantasy football expert here at the F-Ball NFL podcast joining us this week. Of course, it's none other than Rumford Johnny. He's one half of the Rummy Ray podcast, and he's formerly from Two Mugs Fantasy Football. And if you're a regular listener to this here podcast, I'm sure that you are familiar with the magical Mr. Rumford Johnny. So welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back.
It feels good to be on the crushed velvet chaise lounge, if you will, of the F-Ball podcast.
I just brushed it.
Thank you. I appreciate getting all the Cheeto dust out of it for me. So, yes, very, very comfortable. Thank you, guys.
So I'm kind of in shock at this point that, like, the first round of the NFL draft was 7 days ago, because it feels like it's been a few weeks or a month, considering everything that's happened since, especially with the Ted Wells report about Patriots coming out, and of course the whole Lyle Collins saga that we've been following. But we're actually not that far removed from the 2015 NFL draft.
Yeah, leading up to it, it's really interesting to kind of see how things, transpire. It's almost like you hear about things the last minute, because there are plenty of teams around the NFL who all have their investigators and leaks, if you will, that kind of bring these little things forward about players, and it helps, knock some players down boards. It's kind of almost seemingly unfair in a
yep.
way, but it's, it does kind of help, hedge some of those bets for some teams that really don't pick high and they want a certain play to fall to them. And it happens. We saw that with Collins, obviously, mm-hmm. within the last couple of weeks. Jay Ajayi's knee obviously became an issue late. And these things all happen within like a few weeks of the draft.
Yeah.
And it kind of sets the table for everybody. And, again, fair or not, it's just sort of the same thing happens every year. We always hear about a player, Wonderlic score. Oh, he's not very bright, and not a very great. And then you hear about his work ethic and all this stuff and blah, blah,
yep.
blah, blah. And then before you know it, the teams that are willing to take chances on some of these players obviously do, the Cowboys being, top of that list with Randy Gregory and Collins, obviously, and pretty good risk because they're pretty talented players. So and you're in that position and you can kind of sort of, assume some of that risk, then you should be fine. But it's always interesting to kind of see how that plays out, because some of the stuff too, we don't hear about it till literally like the very last minute. And
yeah.
It's always compelling because you know this information has made it to some teams. It's made it to some front offices, or maybe all of them, who knows, but it's not made public until the very last second. And it's almost
yeah.
like it's put out there to kind of help exacerbate a fall for players that people want to get later. So,
well, let's start talking about some of the fantasy football value of some of these players. Let's start with running back, because obviously, it's a position that teams obviously need, but it's kind of a gamble when you talk about fantasy football, especially with some of these running backs drafted who are kind of going to be thrown into committee situations. I want to start with Todd Gurley. Obviously drafted by the St. Louis Rams, is at some point going to emerge as their bell cow back. Clearly, the strategy in thinking about Todd Gurley as a fantasy football player is very different. If you're coming from a dynasty situation, you're more comfortable absorbing that risk. But in a redraft situation, is there any value you think to having Todd Gurley this year? Do you think that in a redraft situation, maybe that's a later round pick and kind of hope that he comes on, mid-season, late season?
Yeah, it's exactly that. In redraft, I think you take him a little bit later, and you watch and wait and see how the draft falls, basically. If Todd Gurley, say, falls sort of like in the middle rounds and there are still viable, healthy options there at running back that are starter-level running backs, then you're obviously going to take those first and wait for Gurley. But if he's there a little bit later and you feel really comfortable with what you have at running back in the first, five, six rounds or whatever, and redraft and you want to take him, there's really no downside to that, especially if you feel comfortable about the rest of your draft. I think a lot of people end up relatively having a lot of running backs sitting on their bench anyway in a lot of draft, a lot of leagues, because generally you only start two running backs, maybe a third at flex in a lot of leagues in most formats. So you're not really going to be using a ton of running backs. So a lot of guys will just be sitting on your bench anyway, and you'll be making that decision, you know, who do I start anyway? It's almost better to have a guy that you can stash on your bench and forget about. You know, when he becomes healthy, he can be somebody that helps, you know, lift your team late in the season. So,
yeah,
I don't mind taking him a little bit later in redraft. In Dynasty, obviously, you're taking him number one overall because it doesn't matter if he misses part of the season. You're looking at the, you know, the next 5 years of investment for him and what he does. You know, he's on a separate tier from all the other running backs in this class. I mean, clearly, you know, there are people saying that he was the number one player in the draft. So that's, you know, that's somebody that you definitely want to take number one overall and let, you know, let it fall. I mean, obviously you have enough players, veteran players on your roster to be able to cover some of those weeks where you won't have them. And then when he is available, you know, just kind of roll with it. And it's, you know, they spent a lot of draft capital to get Todd Gurley, an injured player, you know, and they did their homework and they thought a lot about it and they saw their landscape. And to get a guy like this, you know, to make that investment that soon in that high of a draft pick, you obviously have to feel really, really good about his future, about what he'll do in the NFL. And, you know, fantasy owners should feel the same way, really.
But for a more immediate thing, like if you know, you're talking about redraft, if you need immediate help at running back, then Melvin Gordon, who went to the San Diego Chargers, he would probably be the safer bet if you were really targeting a rookie running back in a redraft situation.
Well, here's the thing about rookie running backs in redraft. I'm not somebody that likes to spend, you know, a high draft pick on rookie running backs. I mean. You know, it depends on where he falls. If he falls in the middle of your draft, and he should, in a competitive league, you shouldn't be seeing him go very, very high. I've seen players in the past, like last year, for instance, Bishop Sankey went in the fourth round in a lot of redraft leagues, which I think is way too high. There were players that went by, you know, after him that were much more consistent, much more valuable, had a steady workload.
Yeah, I'll take Frank Gore in the sixth, thank you.
All right. So, you know, the reality is that you have to be careful who you target. I like Gordon, situation. I don't love Gordon, the player. I think he's, somebody again that was in a very, very good system at Wisconsin under, you know, a really good offensive line. That's really been that way for years and years and years. I mean, they just recruit really well on the offensive line. They have great coaching. They're a cohesive unit. A lot of the, you know, Wisconsin offensive linemen, actually, as they become singular, you know, players on an offensive line as they're drafted, don't necessarily become these all-world offensive linemen either.
Right.
You know, it's almost like they all work well together as a unit, you know, the running back in tandem with the line. And so that's why I'm not super high on Gordon, because I've seen some things, basically. And I watch a lot of stuff on Draft Breakdown and all that. I've seen some things from him that show some indecisiveness. When he does have a, you know, hole to run through, he's great. You know, he can make some moves. He can, you know, he has good second level speed. But I think there's some question marks about him. But he certainly, you know, is somebody that inherits a really solid role. So I'd like to take him a little bit later. I'm just saying that I'd probably let somebody else take him a little higher. You know, when that Bishop Sankey kind of train, if you will, begins to kind of, you know, start churning for Melvin Gordon, and he starts to rise a little bit in ADP or average draft position, for people who don't know, I tend to stay away. I let somebody else take them, and I've seen that with Gio Bernard and other players. I just don't invest when they start to rise above veteran players that are already established, are in a good situation, and at least, you know, week to week aren't going to be fighting for carries and touches. So
three running backs that are kind of interesting me from a fantasy standpoint right now are Tevin Coleman, Amir Abdullah and Duke Johnson, going, of course, to the Falcons, the Lions, and the Browns, respectively. You know, these are places with some crowded offensive backfields, a lot of running backs on these rosters, a lot of guys who could get touches this year. You know, where are you on the value of these three players, you know, whether dynasty or in a redraft situation?
Well, it's interesting because they're all in very unique situations. And I think that Coleman, obviously, you know, a lot of people are kind of pumping his tires a little bit because he's in a situation that was kind of an open door.
Right.
Now, the problem is that if you look at the surface of that situation, he's really a bad fit for that offense. Kyle Shanahan runs a zone scheme, an outside right. zone scheme, and Tevin Coleman's not really a one-cut kind of runner. He's a downhill gap runner. And I think that in that scenario, that makes him kind of a bad fit. Now, you hear a lot of people talk about, well, they wouldn't have drafted him if Kyle Shanahan didn't sign off on the player. Now, I don't know that, you know, that that's necessarily the case. I think that they probably have a few running backs that they like, and they take a player that they feel that they like more than player X. I don't necessarily think it's about scheme fit, and that's unfortunate because I don't think that he's naturally that kind of a runner. So that's disappointing, and I think he'll be overdrafted. I think a lot of people right now are really excited about him. In our rookie draft tonight, he went fairly high in the draft, and I wouldn't have touched him. I mean, I'm actually glad somebody else drafted him early because I think he'll struggle in the zone scheme. Not to say that I think Devonta Freeman's going to light the world on fire, because I think he's kind of, you know, just a guy, essentially, but I think he's a better fit for that scheme, mainly because Devonta Freeman and other running backs, and you can go all the way back to actually his teammate, Antoine Smith, was at Florida State around the same time, you know, within that 5-year span, where right. they run a zone blocking scheme. Antoine Smith was a bad fit at Florida State. That's why he kind of fell in the draft. And he actually is a better fit on their old scheme, and actually he's not a great fit for this scheme. So I find it weird that they have two players that are bad fits on their roster right now. And that leaves Devonta Freeman as kind of the one guy that I think does fit well in that scheme. He's just not a guy that we feel like is going to carry the workload on that team. So I'm kind of, you know, if I get Devonta Freeman at a discount, I'm going to probably invest in him a little bit in some leagues, but I'm kind of avoiding that running game. I think it's still about the passing game right. in Atlanta, and I'm not getting super excited about how they utilize the running game, because I think they get some odd fits. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out and there's some veterans still out on the market right now. They grabbed a veteran, or if there were some cuts on some teams, that they grabbed a player that better fit their scheme, because I think that's what's going to end up happening. And they're just going to end up adding a veteran presence that's probably going to be surprisingly usurping some of those carries. So I'd kind of be tentative about drafting any of those guys high.
And then how about Amir Abdullah? You know, he's coming into that situation with the Lions where you've got Joik Bell, who's a pretty effective running back. But you look at the skill set of Amir Abdullah and, you know, his ability to catch, the ability to run the football. He's a pretty good blocker. Seems like a guy who could be on the field quite often. But, of course, you do have that Joik situation. So where does that put Abdullah, at least in his rookie year?
Well, I like him quite a bit. I think that he does almost everything really well. I think he's a very good running back, very explosive, excellent in space. I mean, he makes defenders look stupid, basically. I do think he needs a little bit of work on pass protection. He's not a big guy, so he will get blown up depending on, you know, what kind of blitz he has to pick up.
So I think the Lions drafted a fullback too.
Yeah. I mean, but when he does have to, you know, that's his assignment. He will struggle a little bit. But again, it's not that big of a deal. I think that's something that is developed over time. And I think he's initially more of a third down guy anyway. But I do think he can be more than that. I do think he's physical enough to be, smaller, you know, like a smaller back who also catches the ball well. Maybe like more of like an Ahmad Bradshaw, which I think is a really pretty decent comp. And I think that, you know, that's really kind of what he is in space. He's very explosive, as that wiggle and can make people miss. You know, he's much more durable than Ahmad Bradshaw, so that's a good thing. He's somebody that I love to invest in. I know he did go, just went off the board late in the first round in one of our, in our rookie draft. And that's cool. I mean, I was hoping that he'd fall a little bit to me, but, you know, somebody took him there, and I think that's a good value still. I do think he can inherit that role. Now, Bell, for all intents and purposes, I think Bell was a little dinged up. I think he's somebody that, you know, does deal with injuries a little bit. I think the wheels might come off a little bit for him. So Abdullah certainly has an open door where he can kind of win that job. And I think that, you know, he's somebody that I would like to take in a dynasty league and kind of just wait and see with his situation. Because it could be a situation where it's very much like, you know, like with Hill and Gio Bernard.
Right.
You know, where you just like the bigger back kind of prevails and you hope that's not the case. But I do think that Abdullah is much more explosive and physical than Bernard is, to be honest. I mean, Bernard is a good running back, uh-huh. good pass catcher, can break off big runs. But I think Abdullah is somebody that between the tackles can be a little bit more physical and do a little bit more damage. So, but I do like him. He's somebody that I would kind of hope falls a little bit and don't overreach for him. If you get him, maybe you'll, you know, halfway through the season can inherit that full-time gig. As far as Duke Johnson, I'm still a believer in Isaiah Crowell. I mean, I like you guys know, we talked about that before in an earlier podcast. I still think he's the guy. I still think that Terrence West is the guy that's on the outside looking in, even though they drafted him fairly high. I think that, you know, that was sort of a tell on Terrence West more than it was on Isaiah Crowell. I think they feel like Crowell is the early guy, you know, the grinder. And that Duke Johnson maybe can be more involved in the passing game and spell him a little bit. I think he just gets kind of muddy, and that's kind of why I'm backing off a little bit on Duke Johnson. He hasn't been drafted yet in our league. We're closing out on the first round, so maybe somebody will pick him up, but I think he's probably going to fall into the second round. So that's not a bad value. I'm just concerned that he's going to be in a scenario where, you know, he just doesn't have enough touches to be viable. Year one, maybe year two. So I'm kind of hoping in most of my drafts that he falls a little bit and I can grab him. But it is a team that, you know, obviously, you know, from if you look at the whole picture, that they still want their identity to be play good defense and run the football and try not to make too many mistakes passing the football. So at least in that front, he's falling into a situation where they'll fully utilize his skill set, I think.
Yeah, the thing that appeals to me, you know, fantasy-wise, dynasty-wise in particular with Duke Johnson is that ability to catch passes because, you know, even if you have West and Kroll both involved with the run game on top of having Johnson there, you know, they only combined for 27 pass targets and 151 yards and one receiving touchdown last year. Neither of those guys are passing targets. They're not hands guys like that in the same way that Duke Johnson is. And mm-hmm. I feel like Johnson has the potential to fill a role for the Browns. It's kind of, you know, a check down guy, especially if you've got, you know, Johnny Manziel starting eventually. You know, I think that he has that potential to be that kind of safety valve for a young quarterback. So I think that, you know, I think he's very intriguing. But again, I have to agree, you know, given that situation with the potential of three running backs getting touches for the Browns this year, that it is a little bit muddy, but I think that he does have enough upside as a receiver to, you know, be in consideration, especially, you know, especially from a dynasty standpoint.
Sure. Absolutely.
What about TJ Yeldon? Is he going to be the thunder to Denard's lightning, or is Denard just going to be on the shelf now?
Well, you know, they did invest a little bit on the offensive line, in Jacksonville. So there's some hope there that they'll improve. I think their offensive line was just kind of okay last year and probably a little bit below average. Mm-hmm. And I think that hurts somebody like, you know, Gerhardt, who's kind of just a pretty basic downhill guy. And I think that really does play a little bit more to Denard Robinson, obviously, and to Yeldon. And Yeldon is a big back. He's a big physical back, really, really good blocker. So that's really good for his in terms of him staying on the field. You know, whenever you have to see a player, we've seen this from other players too in the past, especially with a team like the Giants, with David Wilson, Andre Williams. Those guys had to get yanked because they weren't great pass protectors. Yeldon is. He's very, very good. And he's also has good hands as a pass catcher. Is kind of like he's a bit of a shuffler, what I like to call it. Somebody that like takes short, choppy steps, you know, to decide where he wants to make that one cut and go. But he is strong after, you know, first contact. He's a physical back, and I do think that, you know, he has an opportunity. I had him ranked second after the draft in my rookie rankings. And I do think he has at least that opportunity to steal that job and run away with it. So I do like him quite a bit. My concern is that team is going to fall behind still. I still think they're still a team that's, you know, building. You know, they're still in that sort of build to be a quality team in their division. They're still going to fall behind in some games. And they're going to need to throw more. And that, you know, might more often than not have him just pass protecting and, you know, maybe catching some passes, but I don't know what his long, you know, short-term value is right now. I think his long-term value is a little bit more appealing to me, maybe year two, year three.
They do get Tennessee twice, by the way.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. But I will say this, man, hat tip to, and I eviscerated this guy all over Twitter, but Rustin Webster had a really good draft this year, finally, so... Yeah. You know, and I think that Titans, if everything comes together, and there's a lot of ifs there, that they could be a much better team. So that division's going to be very, very interesting to watch this year, I think.
Yeah, I don't think the Tennessee Titans had a good draft. I just see more confusing stuff out of them, just to continue along the path of mediocrity.
I'll respectfully disagree. I thought they had a great draft, but that's just. I mean, it's still. Again, this is like, you know, going out and buying all the different toys and not really knowing how to play with them. That's where it really gets muddy, because if they don't know how to utilize these talents, then it's all for naught, because it's just talent. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sure.
Well, on that note, let's talk about David Cobb. For some reason, Brian's a big fan of this David Cobb fellow that the Tennessee Titans drafted. You know, what role is he going to play, and what kind of fantasy value does he have?
He's got a huge fantasy value. Number one, he's got a rookie quarterback.
Sure.
He's got a team that's heavily invested in the offensive line the last couple of years, okay? Mm-hmm. And also, he's got a pretty much a bum squad on that depth chart to deal with as far as, sure, as winning a full-time job.
Sean Bishop, Green's still there, right?
Sean Green's there. Bishop Sankey showed me nothing last year. I
Dexter
like
McCluster?
Him. Yeah, I didn't like him coming out of college. I thought people were really overhyping Sankey last year. Mm-hmm. And I might have said on this podcast that I wasn't a fan last year too, by the way, so you might have to go back and listen to that one. But I like Cobb. And the reason I like Cobb is a couple of reasons. And I've said this before in this podcast too, that, you know, Ken Whisenhunt would love to have a downhill Steelers-like running back, you know,
right,
a punisher, if you will.
Sure.
That works well with the offensive line that he has in place, which, again, is a power road-grading run team. And that's exactly what David Cobb is. He's a downhill runner. He has good hands. He's a good, you know, pretty good pass catcher, solid pass catcher, pretty good, you know, pass protector as well. So he does everything, you know, very good. And I think that's all you really need when you have a situation like that. I compared him to Stephen Ridley with better hands. Okay.
Okay.
And if you had that, most teams would be excited.
Oh, sure.
Because that's a solid running back that you could basically give 25 touches to a game and some catches as well. And, you know, he's going to get it done for you. He's not going to waste effort. He's not going to have negative runs. And I think that's what he is. You know, it's nothing flashy, but it's solid. It's positive yardage, kill the clock kind of stuff. And I like him a lot. I think he landed in a very, very good spot. And that's, I talk about that in my my draft plan, I even talked about that in my rookie dynasty rankings. Opportunity. It's all about opportunity for me. And is the rest of the depth chart, you know, is it ambiguous? You know, there right. Is it really a situation where you can come in and take a job? A few years ago, that worked for Zach Stacy. We've seen that worked, you know, to some extent for Isaiah Crowell last year. So once the opportunity presents itself, I think that's, you know, that's very, very important for, you know, especially running backs who sometimes will fall a little bit in the draft. And you get these guys a little bit later, and it's probably one of the easier jobs. If you do everything just well enough and you don't screw things up, you can, you know, inherit a really solid. I mean, look at New England, you know, with LeGarrette Blount. I mean,
right.
You see this so often on certain teams. I mean, Alfred Morris came into a situation like that too. He had an opportunity, he took advantage of it. So a solid, no-nonsense type of player more often than not can win a job and hold on to it at running back. And that's where the focus is now kind of shifting a little bit. Unless you get a guy like Todd Gurley at the top of the draft, then for the most part, teams are waiting and you can get a guy, you know, a little bit later, late round, second, you know, second round, third and fourth round, or undrafted free agents. You can get guys to be able to, you know, eventually be your starting running back.
Two running backs I'm interested in, mainly only from a dynasty standpoint, Javorius Allen, drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, and Cameron Artis Payne, drafted by the Carolina Panthers. You know, I'm interested in both these picks because you got Baltimore. You know, we're gonna have another, at least one more year here with Justin Forsett kind of leading the way there. Whether or not he'll continue to have the same success he had with Gary Kubiak as his coordinator, he will with Mark Trestman, we don't really know, but you know, behind him you've got Lorenzo Taliaferro, but then there's not a whole lot on that depth chart. You know, Carolina, that's a team that clearly likes to run the ball. They still have Jonathan Stewart out there, Mike Tolbert, Cam Newton, obviously, who can and does run the ball very well. But again, Jonathan Stewart's not really a spring chicken either. So I feel like these are two guys to just, you know, kind of keep an eye on, stash away. Maybe you have a practice squad for your dynasty team or something, that these would be two guys to just be like, okay, you know, give it a year, give it 2 years, and see how it plays out with the depth chart in both Baltimore and Carolina.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I like Allen. I think that, you know, there's an opportunity there because, number one, Forsett, you know, for the great breakout season that he had, really was a journeyman before that.
Right.
Kind of fell into a really good situation. He is now on the wrong side of 30, I believe, or 29, or is going to be 30, if I'm not mistaken. And that's usually the wall that players hit, you know, when they start to fall off anyway. So,
right.
So that's, you know, and it's rare. Some running backs don't, but for the most part, most do. So that's an opportunity for a young running back to kind of pick up, some of that slack. Again, like you said, Taliaferro is really, you know, he's more of a fullback, and he didn't really do much with his opportunities last year. So Allen has that slot. Cameron Artis Payne went to high school with me, and I'm in my 40s. So no, I'm just kidding. He's, I think, what is he, like 24, 25? He's a little bit on the he's a little long in the tooth for a running back. But there's an opportunity there. Like you said, Jay Stu, you know, 1 foot on the on a banana peel, the other on the bench. So.
Yeah.
That could happen at any time. Although I will say, you know, the hope that everybody had with Jay Stu last year kind of, you know, it bore some fruit last year. So that was good to see because we always knew he was a talented back. But you're right, though. It's not a bad idea to grab a backup in that offense because, you know, they are going to run the football. You know, it's a team that always had that mentality. So, It's certainly not a bad situation to stash one of those guys. Although I will say he's one of my least favorite backs because he didn't catch any passes in college.
Right.
And that's kind of sucks. So, I mean, obviously he's just going to be an early down guy or maybe a goal line guy. So he's kind of limited in his ceiling, but yeah, I mean, certainly those are pretty good opportunities. I do like the Allen opportunity a little bit more, I think.
Moving on to wide receiver, so for the second straight draft class, we had a pretty deep group of wide receivers, which is good news from a fantasy football standpoint. You know, I've seen multiple, you know, there's a lot of rankings out there, and there seems to be, you know, you can kind of shuffle around some of these top picks, you know, whether it's Amari Cooper going to the Oakland Raiders, Kevin White going to the Chicago Bears. You know, where do you think, you know, who do you think?
Parker.
And Devontae Parker, I think, who's going to a really nice situation for him with the Miami Dolphins. You know, of those guys, you know, who's the guy that if you needed a young receiver in a redraft situation, who would you go for? And who would you go for in a dynasty situation? And is it the same guy?
Well, yeah, yes. I think it's overall it's Cooper right now.
Okay.
I think for both situations, although I will say long term, I still like Kevin White over anybody, just because I do think that eventually it could be a scenario where it's the 1A, 1B situation in
right.
Chicago. The only problem is that the quarterback situation in Chicago, we don't know what's going to happen with Cutler. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, eventually what could happen and what are you getting now? To fill that void, I don't know. So that's the only downside. But I do think he's like a perfect fit for what Cutler does. I think he's a great yard. You know, he kind of is a little. He's sort of a mix of Brandon Marshall and Julio Jones. You know,
right.
he does have that tough after the catch kind of mentality. Likes to fight for the football, but also can, you know, go up and get it. And he's still kind of a raw product. He's still developing. He's still kind of, you know, he's still got his baby teeth, if you will, as a receiver. So I think that, you know, eventually he'll be really a great receiver in this league. So, but that's probably 1 to 2 years down the line where he just really kind of breaks out. Cooper, I think, is a guy who's probably already at his ceiling, but it's a good ceiling. And what I mean by that is that he's probably one of those 100 catch type slot receivers
mm-hmm.
That could, you know, possibly score, you know, 8 touchdowns a year at the top end, you know, and could be one of those really great slot receivers that every year you count on, like Wes Welker did in New England, where you had 100 plus catches a year. I think that could be Cooper, and I think he's a little bit more sudden than somebody like Welker, a little bit more athletic, I think. But that's, you know, that's really kind of the safe pick, is that, you know, that year one, he landed in the perfect spot for that quarterback in Derek Carr, who has a really accurate intermediate short game. And that's exactly what, you know, Cooper does best. He catches the ball in space. He makes people miss, you know, yards after the catch. That's his wheelhouse. He's not the big down the field threat. You know what I mean? He's not running every deep route on the tree. He can, but you don't want him doing that every play, because more often than not, the defender is going to be bigger than him down
right.
the field, and they're going to rough him up, and the safety will be over the top, and you know you're not going to be able to place the football, because he's not a guy that will win jump ball 50-50 situations. That's not his wheelhouse. That's not where he wins. So I think he's a plug and play guy though in that offense with that quarterback. I think he's probably, you know, could be an 80 plus 90 catch guy this year, which is great for a rookie. So he's the guy. He's the number one wide receiver of the group, obviously. So that's who I'm rolling with. I think it gets after that, and I drafted this guy too at number 5, and I waited because there was some running backs going off the board. Nelson Agholor. I really love Nelson Agholor. I think he's in a perfect situation. He's actually inheriting the flanker job from Jeremy Maclin, who's now with the Chiefs.
Right.
So he's going to be utilized more on the outside stuff and some of those similar routes in the red zone that Maclin was being targeted for. So I think that he's in a very, very good spot. He can play the X, the Y, or the Z. He's an outstanding return man. I mean, on special teams, I don't know if you've watched any of Agholor, he's dynamic on special teams. So he's a guy that I know Chip Kelly, from everything, all reports, is that Chip Kelly was like enamored with his kid. He was a Pac-12 kid, so Kelly knows him really well. And it's the kind of player that he just kind of covets, you know, like Zach Ertz.
Sure.
You know, obviously he had to play against Zach Ertz too. So anybody that he knows so well from that conference, you know, he's going to really want to have in his offense. And he knows that he's a quick twitch guy, high volume pass catcher that can fits really well what they do in Philadelphia. So I really like him. I think he's also another guy, maybe a discount Amari Cooper in a way, who can still catch a lot of balls. Maybe has a little bit more, you know, might catch a few more touchdowns actually in that offense because of where he's going to be lined up as opposed to being in the slot all the time. I think Jordan Matthews is going to stick in the slot in Philadelphia, where he's naturally a better player, I think. I think he's kind of miscast a little bit outside. So I think he stays in the slot. They move, Aguilar out to flanker, and he'll, you know, I think he'll light it up this year. I think he'll be great this year. I'm really looking forward to watching him play.
Yeah, I'm liking the situation with Devontae Parker in Miami as well. I mean, obviously this is a team that spent a lot of time this offseason kind of reworking that receiving core, and now it seems like it's going to be him and Jarvis Landry as the main two passing targets for Ryan Tannehill. I think Tannehill and Parker are going to be a really good tandem, and I think there's a lot of fantasy football there upside there immediately.
Yeah, my only concern with Parker is that he's got Kenny Stills in the way. Not that the fact that, you know, I'm not so worried about Jennings, a veteran guy, although this year we might see more of Jennings than Parker to start. Eventually, I think Parker kind of becomes the guy and that Jennings is sort of relegated to that fourth wide receiver role. But it's tough when a guy that you liked that high, you know, in your rankings or is seen by the draft community as one of the top wide receivers, sort of become the de facto wide receiver three at the, you know, the highest basically. Because I do think Kenny Stills was there to take the top off the defense. He's going to be targeted. And Jarvis Landry, I don't think his role changes at all. I think he is that guy that Tannehill trusts. He's there where he needs to be. You know, he's that trusted guy. You know, he's sort of the Edelman, you know, of that offense. You know, he's going to be targeted quite a bit. And I think that that won't change. So that does kind of, again, you have to always look at the trickle down effect. Like, where are the targets coming from? You know, how much of that slice of that pie are you getting? And I don't know that slice is big enough right now. So I'm letting someone else draft him earlier than me and maybe waiting a little bit and taking a chance on somebody else. Like, you know, I waited a little bit. Now, granted, Parker was taken before. I just took Green Beckham at 11, okay, in this rookie draft. Parker was taken before him. Now, I think Green Beckham might be a little raw, and it's a new situation with a quarterback and all that, but I think they have big plans for him to be the number one guy. Now, when you take a number one guy versus a number three guy, that's an easy call for me in fantasy. I'd rather have the guy that's ultimately going to see more targets, even if he doesn't catch as many passes. You know, maybe it's a little raw at first. The worst case scenario for him is like Kelvin Benjamin type stuff, you know, because he's going to be the big main target. I'd rather invest in that than invest a guy that may be the guy 2 to 3 years down the line. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a little hesitant about Doriel Green Beckham, in a redraft situation.
Oh, redraft, unless, I wouldn't touch him. Yeah,
no
yeah.
way. Because even the only way that I would find him to be useful in a redraft situation is if this summer is an incredibly productive and impressive training camp for Marcus Mariota. Because you've got this rookie quarterback taking his first snaps in the NFL and you know, penciled in as the number one receiver. You got another rookie there, and I think that the risk level in a redraft situation is just kind of crazy, too crazy for me. As a dynasty pick, obviously you got the off-field risks with him, and you never really know what you're going to get, but you know that on the field he is a very high quality wide receiver, and he's, you know, as long as he lives up to that billing, he should have a pretty fruitful production from a dynasty standpoint. But redraft, no way this year.
I think if anything, you know, right now, I mean, yeah, just the long-term investment wise, I mean, you ultimately want a guy that's going to be the number one. But I think right now it'll probably be, you know, Delaney Walker, Kendall Wright, you know, looking for somebody that's going to be targeted more often than not, you know, in that offense. And I think that's probably smart. And I do think Cobb as well will be relied upon heavily once he wins that job. And I believe that he will. So, yeah, it's always – you always kind of have to cut the field in half with a rookie quarterback, you know, and imagine where the targets are, you know. And that's kind of always a safe bet, you know. Or, you know, not to say that Mariota doesn't have the arm. I think he does have a downfield arm. But I think learning the offense does kind of keep you from making those big plays. There's some guys who are just physically limited, like an Alex Smith, who won't take deep shots because he doesn't trust his arm. There are young quarterbacks who don't take deep shots because they just don't know the offense yet. And they're, you know, they just want to keep things safe for themselves. And obviously the offensive coordinator will tailor that around them as well to limit mistakes. So that's usually the case early on for young quarterbacks, but ultimately down the line, you know, that's what you want. You want that big prototypical wide receiver one type who's going to be targeted heavily.
You know, I also kind of like the dynasty upside for Trey McBride, taken in the seventh round, kind of falling far, much farther than anybody had anticipated.
Yeah, we all did.
Reasons nobody even knows why. But you
well,
know,
actually,
he's...
this is what I heard, and this is not breaking news or anything because it's all over.
Sure.
RotoWorld and other places. I did hear, and I from some people that, you know, more better connected than I am, that maybe there was a little bit of little diva attitude in interviews and stuff like that from him. Uh-huh. Maybe that's why he fell. He was a small school guy who thought he should be a big school guy. And maybe teams were a little turned off by that. But I do think he's a good player. Again, I when I was kind of putting together my rankings, I kind of had him relatively high too as well. He was in my top 10. I said he was a discount. You know, if you have Amari Cooper and Aguilar is the discount Amari Cooper, then Trey McBride's the discount Nelson Aguilar, which is kind of like it all fits together. They all do similar things. So yeah, he's definitely somebody that I like. You know, what they call Devy leagues or developmental leagues, which is where you draft guys and you hold on to them a little bit longer. And I think that he's somebody that probably could be something, certainly. I mean, it's a long shot when you get drafted that late, but certainly could be one of those guys that in that offense just works. He just has to, you know, I think what really will help, is in the preseason. If he gets a lot of reps in the preseason and we see some flashes, that'll be a really good tell. And I think that to your listeners, that's something you really should be focusing on, is some of these guys who are drafted a little bit later are going to get a lot of opportunities in the preseason. And they're going to flash. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win the job, but there's somebody that you might want to consider in your leagues to kind of stash if you see that opportunity, especially if you draft later in some of your leagues and you draft rookies in like a startup league. You draft them both late in the year. I think that's something that you have to kind of look for. Watch to see the guys that actually maximize their opportunity. If they're dropping pass after pass, or if they're fumbling left and right, probably a good chance they're going to get cut.
Yeah.
So those are the guys you want to be targeting. Even if they break off an 85-yard run, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make the team. So the guys that do things consistently are going to have a shot, an opportunity, and that's, you know, that will all present itself in the preseason.
You know, a lot of people are confused. I'm one of them. The Indianapolis Colts round one selection of receiver Philip Dorsett, considering, you know, they've basically got a bigger, just as fast and more experienced Philip Dorsett and Dante Moncrief right now. And of course, you know, you've got T.Y. Hilton there. You've got, you know, Andre Johnson in the twilight of his career spending a year there. Is there what kind of fantasy value, especially, you know, in a dynasty standpoint, is there really for Philip Dorsett? Do the Colts really have a big role plan for this guy? I mean, what is this?
God, you think they have to?
It's
right?
It's just the weirdest pick. It's the strangest thing I saw in round one.
Well, Ryan Grigson is basically is really an enigma of a GM. I'm sure he's done some Matt Millen type stuff as of late. But I will say this, I think they do have a plan. And I think that, this situation is that they're going to have to pay Andrew Luck a lot of money very, very soon. And they would have to also pay T.Y. Hilton more money than they want to, probably. And they can't keep both. By drafting Dorsett, you can do both. You can keep both and get the same kind of guy, the smaller field stretching guy that can take the top off, separate. You know, he separates really well, like Hilton can, you know, with that top end speed, and get the same kind of production at a discount. And still develop some of those other guys, you know, that you have on the roster. And I think that's kind of where they're going. I don't know that, you know, it seemed redundant. I'm sure he could have gotten, maybe he heard something that, you know, Dorsett was going to, you know, go at the top of round two, you know, and just wasn't going to have a pick, you know, or it just wasn't going to fall to him. And he decided, right, we'll take our guy now, which a lot of people don't understand. Like they say, well, small receivers, you should wait on them. And they say, well, if you think the guy's really, you know, high on your board and you think he's a top end guy,
he's your guy, right?
You take him a little earlier than you think you should, because you think they might not be there, and maybe you don't have the capital or don't want to have to trade picks to move up. You just take them outright, you know, whether people agree with it or not. It, you know, that's really up to the boardroom. So I think that, that's probably the way they looked at it. They have plans for him down the line. I think that, you know, their situation is, again, to primarily focus on paying Andrew Luck, which we all know he's going to get the biggest contract that
absolutely
quarterback's ever seen. And because once Wilson sets the benchmark, and I think, you know, that's all going to come down the pike as well, he's going to get more. You know, he's going to wait for that. You know, that's going to be – that's how it's going to happen. Once Luck gets paid once Russell Wilson gets paid, then he's going to get a little bit more than Russell Wilson.
Right.
And he should. I mean, because of the type of quarterback that he is. Now, I love Russell Wilson, but I think, you know, when you look at the two scenarios, I think one quarterback is putting, you know, pretty much the team on his back. You know, and because of this, they don't have a defense or whatever. And the other quarterback has a lot of support around him. He has a great running game. He's got a great defense. Luck is kind of, you know, people can knock him for, you know, this and that and interceptions, but he's had a lot of drop passes, a lot of tip passes that are interceptions. So it's not, you know, there's a lot of context to some of the mistakes that he made, but he's still a great quarterback that's only going to get better, and his ceiling is very, very high. And he's a prototype. You know, he's a big, strong quarterback that's, you know, that's going to probably play a long time and not miss many games. So, and those are hard to come by. So that's they have to pay him. And when they do that, they don't have much money to pay a small wide receiver. And that's smart. That's smart to not overpay undersized receivers, especially like that. I'm not talking about Antonio Brown, who can do a lot more than what T.Y. Hilton can do, in my opinion. I'm talking about a guy that's really just a deep threat, essentially. And I think that you can get that pretty much in every draft, really.
You know, briefly, I want to talk a little bit about about some of the tight ends taken in the draft this year.
Do we have to?
just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
You know, there weren't a lot of tight ends, high quality tight ends in this year's draft class. Of course, the top tight end, Max Williams, went to the Baltimore Ravens. I think that's a great location for him. I wouldn't say go and get Max Williams in the third round of a redraft league draft this year. But I think that he has redraft value as a rookie. He has immense upside from a dynasty standpoint. You know, Dennis Pitta still is not sure if he is going to be able to resume his playing career, which means, you know, that big-bodied tight end that Joe Flacco loves so much will switch over to Max Williams pretty much immediately. And even if Pitta's out there, I think that Williams is going to be a huge part of that passing offense. So I think that he has considerable upside, both in dynasty and redraft formats. Another guy that I'm really curious about is Jeff Harriman going out to the Denver Broncos, especially after they lost Julius Thomas this offseason. I think that, you know, Harriman's a guy who wasn't really, you know, utilized to his full potential at Ohio State. And I think especially, you know, spending this year, at least 1 year, with Peyton Manning, I think is going to do him a lot of good.
Yeah, I think, you know, I will say this about rookie tight ends as far as dynasty is concerned. The year one investment is probably something that you you know, you shouldn't expect a lot out of.
Sure.
Rookie tight ends don't do much. Second year tight ends generally don't do much. Sometimes they break out. Year three is usually the time when we see what we get with tight ends. You know, they usually break out and have great years, or they just show that they're just guys and that they will probably draft another tight end the next year, that team. So I do like Max Williams. I think he's a good fit in that offense, obviously, with Tressman. So, you know, great situation for him. Harriman's, I was injured a little bit, but again, like you said, very, very good situation. For him, big tight end. I love to see what he can do. Again, I don't have high expectations for young tight ends. I mean, I just as soon do this. I'd say if you have late picks in your draft and you're considering a tight end, trade those picks if you can in your league for veteran tight ends if they're around, because you usually get some value out of them. As opposed to, you know, drafting a tight end that's just going to burn a hole in your bench, you know, and sometimes they just don't break out, you know. You get a Tyler Eifert, you know, and who I really like coming out, you know, just.
Well, he had that horrific elbow injury last year, so you can't really.
Well, but
he's
but,
a big part of that offense.
I don't know. You know, like I look at it like, you know, from a big picture standpoint. Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I don't know. So this is he's on the clock right now, basically. He has to do something. You know what I mean? We have to see some improvement, some flourish. And I think that's true of a lot of tight ends. Because you'll hear this every year, especially in fantasy. This is a year so-and-so will break out. You know, like Darius Green. You know, everybody was waiting for that to happen. It hasn't happened yet.
Right.
So that's what I'm talking about. So if you have the opportunity to sort of package that player in a draft pick like Darius Green or somebody else like that, you know, we just talked about, and get a veteran that's established, that you know that's done something in the league, you know, that's still at a relatively peak age, you know, for production. I'd certainly make that move, because I just don't see the value of having players that you're not going to start just burn a hole in your bench without any upside. You know, it just doesn't make sense, and that's usually the case with tight ends, so or owning like several quarterbacks that you're never going to use, you know, like just there's no point, you know, you only need a couple of them, you know, and don't go overboard with that, because I've seen a lot of dynasty leagues where people have like a half a dozen quarterbacks. I'm like, why? You don't you won't use them. It's a singular position on your team. If you have three max with a developmental guy,
yeah,
fine.
That's what I like, the starter, the backup, and then the project.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, exactly. That's how you should focus. Don't overdo it in the singular position, especially tight end too. That's another one. It's just such a waste when you can have more running backs, which you'll need, because running backs will get hurt. You're going to need extra running backs. And wide receivers, because wide receivers, even if you don't use them all, wide receivers are more viable draft capital. You know, somebody wants the value of a consistent wide receiver, again, over a tight end or whatever, because people are always looking for extra wide receivers, because you're generally going to use three of them every week, depending on your league format, and usually as a flex or maybe even a super flex. So you're going to need at least four or five. So you always need extra wide receivers. So those, to me, those have more value for your dynasty leagues.
Yeah, but you know, you never know. Like, for example, Jesse James taken by the Steelers in round 5. I mean, that's the Heath Miller replacement. Miller's going to either be released next season or be done when his contract is up in 2017. You know, Jesse James has basically the same exact kind of skill set, same kind of profile, you know, same kind of every down tight end, old school, very physical. Blocks and catches, and so I think that's a guy that's worth an investment from a dynasty standpoint. Especially again, if you're in a league with a practice squad, you know, I think among the tight ends, I really like Max Williams, and I really like for the long term, eventually having a starter out of Jesse James, because I think that's where the Steelers are headed with that.
Plus, like, you know, you can sing that song by by Shear whenever he's on the field, you know, just like Jesse James. But yeah, no, I think he's somebody that, you know, can, if he maximizes his athleticism, he could be an interesting player. But he's a big lumbering, like Undertaker kind of a guy. You know, he's not he's not somebody that flashes on the field as explosive, like somebody like Gronkowski, you know, where that,
right,
that's
but you don't have to be
athletic.
You can be Heath Miller and be very productive fantasy football.
Yeah, but Heath player. Miller, he'll this is the thing about fantasy football. If you don't have a Rob Gronkowski, you don't have a top tier tight end. Maybe the Travis Kelce, who potentially could break out this year. If you don't have one of those guys, then you probably should just kind of plug and play tight ends, because week to week they're just going to have some wavering value, you know, because some weeks they're asked to stay in the block, you know, they're not targeted heavily. Some weeks you just got a guy, you know, that just sort of, you know, that comes out of nowhere and just sort of blows up for 1 week. You know, Delaney Walker will have two or three good weeks, you know, and that kind of happens. And, you know, it's so inconsistent week to week that the investment of a tight end too. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying, like, you could strike gold, but you could also just have a guy burning a hole in your bench. So I'm just saying, just limit your investment in some of those singular positions. I think you're almost better off because somebody in your league is going to draft way too many of them, and they're going to be light on tight ends and light on wide receiver or running back, and you can always swap for one whenever you need one. So there's always some idiot in your league that does.
Well, before we let you go, Johnny, pick a player, potentially one we have not discussed here tonight, somebody that you think will be useful as a rookie, maybe, you know, clearly more useful in a dynasty format in general for all rookies, but, you know, who's somebody that we haven't talked about here that you're very bullish about in terms of fantasy football in this rookie class?
Well, it's more of a moonshot, but I think it's somebody that I think the fantasy community has been very, very high on, and a small school guy and immensely productive. That would be Zach Zenner, running back who's had 3 2,000-yard seasons. If you have to go dig to find his cut-ups on the internet, but he's got one you know, game on Draft Breakdown where he's in the snow and he's just an absolute beast, you know, like a Mike Alstott kind of, like John Riggins kind of style runner. He's undrafted free agent with Detroit, so he's in that same situation with Ameer Abdullah, where he could actually be part of the tandem, the backfield tandem of the future. So he's a guy I really do like quite a bit, actually, and if I can get him in my leagues a little bit later, without overdrafting him, I certainly want him on my bench, because I think he's the kind of guy that could be, has good hands too, can catch the football. He can be an every down back in the NFL, and is very, very smart and patient. Has, you know, very good second level speed. So he's somebody that I think is a complete player, very, very productive, very, very smart. I think he's like 37 on the Wonderlic or something. Very, very smart kid. He's somebody that, you know, it's a little bit of a moonshot, you know, but and hopefully somebody doesn't stick him in at fullback because he's white, for God's sakes. But that happens all the time. The damn white guys, you know. But hopefully he'll get an opportunity, you know, to at least be the goal line back, I think, in Detroit. And I think that would be great, to at least give him an opportunity. Again, it's only, you know, if a guy gets a shot, you know, to do something, and they make the most of it, then they usually have an opportunity to kind of win more touches and snaps. So that's a guy that I really like. And if you can get him a little bit later in your dynasty league, then more power to you.
Well, Johnny, it was a pleasure.
Real quick.
Got something?
Real quick. I mean, we did talk about everything except, I know, it was a very thin class, but it's not like we should just completely skip the quarterback position altogether. So yeah. Why don't you just at least give us Mariota versus Winston, who you like?
Mariota. I do like Mariota, but I do like Winston right away. I think that, you know, the investments are similar, obviously, 1 and 2. You know, you really can't say one guy was, Like, this isn't a situation where one guy was number one and the other guy got taken at the top of the second round or something.
Right.
This is both teams saying, okay, you're our guy. But I think that given the fact that, you know, this isn't Philadelphia for Mariota, where he would be perfect and would fit in seamlessly into that system with Chip Kelly.
Right.
I'll say this, even if he had gone to Tampa Bay, okay, for Mariota, Dirk Cutter, you know, was basically a mentor to Mark Helfrich at Oregon. So he understands quarterbacks like Mariota who work in that system. So the verbiage and everything, you could easily taper that to help him. I don't know that that's a perfect scenario in Tennessee for him. I do think he's a very smart kid. I think he's a very, very, very competitive. He's a quiet kid. He's more like Eli Manning in that sense, that he's just sort of keeps to himself and, you know, just is a very, very determined kind of a player. But I think that, you know, he will be a good quarterback eventually. I do believe that. I don't know at what level he will be, but I think he could be a solid NFL starter. Now, Winston, for all intents and purposes, is surrounded by talent. He's got a lot of good players on his team. He's got two very, very good wide receivers. He's got a big tight end, you know, untapped tight end, and Seferian Jenkins and Evans and Jackson. He's got a good surrounding cast. They've built up that defense. They've got some good players on their defense as well. So there's some good players there. You know, there are a few players away from some being a really competitive team. So he's already has that in place. I think he has the mentality to go right into an NFL offense and compete and not be flustered by the big stage. I think he's just kind of an easygoing kind of personality that just kind of brushes off, you know, those types of things. You know, we saw even on draft night, we posted that picture of the crab legs, you know, like he's not, it's not too big for him. And I think that, you know, however you feel about him off the field, I think that, you know, he's in terms of being ready for the spotlight. I think he's ready for an NFL defense. He knows how to read, you know, progressions and everything else. He's ready. He understands everything. So I think that that helps him a lot, you know, and I think that he doesn't need to have something tailored. Now, we've seen quarterbacks. Mariota will be another. We've seen RG3 have to go through the same thing. Jake Locker, to some extent, they've had to tailor offenses to fit what they're used to. That's usually, you know, works for a year, and after that, the tell is there. They haven't advanced beyond that. Then defenses begin to figure out what you're doing. We saw that with Tebow. You know, it's very, very vanilla, and they figure you out, and they just dissect you.
Right.
So with Winston, you know, we saw him on you know, Gruden camp and everything on the whiteboard, and even with Mariucci and game changers. He was up there, you know, breaking down plays and, you know, with ease, really. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, he's a student of the game. He understands it. And I think he'll be, you know, he'll take his shots. He's going to get hit. He's going to get sacked. He's going to throw interceptions. But I don't think he's going to get flustered by it. And I think he's going to be able to kind of progress after this first year and maybe have a good, you know, rookie season, maybe similar to Teddy Bridgewater, maybe a little bit better, and go from there. I don't know that Mariota will, right out of the box, have that kind of season. I think he'll flash. I think he'll have some moments, but I think his road will be a little bit more challenging. I think there's a lot more for him to learn in terms of going from what he's used to in that system. Because, again, they didn't call plays in the huddle at Oregon.
Right.
It was signals from the sideline. So that's going to change. That speeds up the game for the quarterback, and if you don't, you can't adjust to that right away, then it's more challenging. Now, again, that's completely different, you know, from Winston, who, you know, is used to at Florida State, you know, that tempo, that offense, it's pro style. He's ready to go out of the box. So that's why I think it's very, very different, the two scenarios. While they still both were surrounded by some decent talent on offense now, one is just kind of geared up a little bit more. Let's put it this way. They're both running a race, and there's a pretty good lead for Winston.
Well, now that we talked about the quarterback position that I completely forgot even existed in this year's draft, thanks a lot, college quarterbacks. Now I think we've pretty much covered some of the more intriguing and more important players fantasy football wise from this 2015 rookie class. So again, Johnny, as always, it's been quite a pleasure having you here on our
fantastic, modest
little show.
Thank you, guys.
Before we let you go, where can our wonderful listeners find you on the interwebs?
Well, if you want to check out my dynasty rankings, which basically went up this past week, you can check those out at brojackson.com. You know, that's where I park my written stuff now. So, and you can also check out the Rummy and Ray fantasy football podcast with my buddy Ray Summerlin. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, any other platform that you listen to in a mobile fashion, if you will. And we're going to have a great guest next week, Mr. Adam Levitan, you guys know from Roto World.
Yep.
He was never on our Two Mugs podcast, so we're really looking forward to talking to him. He's big in the DFS, Daily Fantasy community, so looking forward to hearing his takes. So we'll be getting deep into that stuff. So.
Awesome.
Excellent. Well, enjoy the rest of your rookie draft you're doing with the fine folks at Roto World and a bunch of other bright fantasy football minds. So you seem to be already in good shape with Todd Gurley and Aguilar and and DGB. So
I will say this to kind of give another hat tip to my wife. I mentioned this to her and I tweeted this out. My first three picks, because she asked me how I was doing. And she said, that sounds like a good debate team. Todd Gurley, Nelson Aguilar, and Doriel Green. kind of the most nerdy sounding three guys.
Oh, yeah.
Not the least bit nerdy, but anyway. But I thought that was pretty funny. So.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Johnny. I'm sure that we'll be having you back on as the as training camps open.
Yes.
and camp battles start playing themselves out, and we can actually find out if David Cobb or Tevin Coleman can actually break out and lead the way at running back, for example, for their respective teams and so on, and all the fun stuff that happens with rookies.
Yes.
At training camp.
And you guys can feel free to call me out on all of the mistakes that I made.
Yes, I'm making a checklist now. Okay, he said Titans had a good draft. Okay.
Trolling, baby, trolling.
All right. Well, until we have you on again, have a good night, and we'll talk to you again soon, Johnny.
Thanks,
right. Man.
Thank you again to Rumford Johnny from the Remy and Ray podcast for joining us this week talking about some fantasy football. It's never too early to get prepared for fantasy football season.
Johnny's always entertaining and thorough.
Exactly, and it's always a pleasure when he is joining us. So thanks again to Remy for joining us this week.
And hope everybody enjoyed that.
I hope everyone enjoyed it, and I hope everybody is feeling better prepared about their feelings, their fantasy football feelings about some of these key rookies.
Especially if you have a dynasty draft coming up here.
Like we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that does it for this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. We will not have an episode for you next week. I am traveling to my native land of Pennsylvania to see some family and friends on a kind of a mini workcation. I'm not going to be completely away from writing about the football. But I will be in Pennsylvania, and we will not have our podcasting set up there with us. So we will be back in 2 weeks' time talking about everything, all the latest in the National Football League. Maybe by then Tom Brady will get some sort of discipline handed down. And you know, we've got mini camps, rookie mini camps starting up all around the league. So I'm sure there are going to be some interesting developments in the National Football League for us to talk about.
Oh, there'll be stuff going on
in a couple of weeks' time.
Absolutely.
So until then, a big thanks to Rumford Johnny for joining us this week. I'm your host here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm Andrea Hankst. You can find my work at bleacherreport.com, sportsnot.com, and cle.scout.com. That's cle.scout.com. That's the Orange and Brown Report, the Browns arm of scout.com. You can also get all of my articles in one convenient place by clicking like on my writer Facebook page. That is facebook.com/ahangstnfl. That's A-H-A-N-G-S-T-N-F-L. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at fball_Andrea, F-B-A-L-L underscore Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian, and I co-host and produce this here podcast and can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, again, thank you to Rumford Johnny for joining us. And, of course, thanks to all of you for listening this week here at the F-Ball
Yes.
NFL podcast. We, of course, appreciate each and every one of you tuning in whenever you do tune in. And we'll be back, like I said, in 2 weeks. So enjoy. It's getting warmer here around the country. And you know, yes, there's no football. And, yes, the draft is over. But now, you know, you can get outside and enjoy some warm temperatures if you so choose. As an alternative to football.
Unless you're, you know, still putting the tape on or something.
Unless you're still putting the tape on. And if you are, more power to
you. God bless you.
God bless all of you putting the tape on here in May. So, again, like I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Hope you enjoyed the show, and peace.
Later.